right. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Friends on 15th podcast. Coming to you from the Friends Center, located at 15th and Cherry Streets, downtown Philadelphia. I am your host, Jennifer Lee, and you know I brought the squad with me today. Your favorite co-host, Miss Shakira. Shakira!
Good morning, everyone.
Oh, and I know you can't see me, but I danced when I said
yeah,
that.
Yeah, me too. I was like doing the shoulders.
It's the shoulder dance. Shakira is our events and administrative manager. And secondly, we have our executive director, Chris Moore.
Hello there.
Not less, but more.
Thank you. I've never heard that joke before.
Oh, I'm sure. Today is November the 27th, 2019. And I say that so excitedly because tomorrow is Turkey Day.
I can't wait.
I'm so excited. It's Turkey Day here in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection.
Yes.
I mean, I guess it's Thanksgiving everywhere, but...
But here in Philly, it's Thanksgiving.
It's Thanksgiving.
Yeah. And everybody is in good mood.
Yes, everywhere. I feel so good. I feel all giddy inside and happy, and I'm just excited. I'm excited. So, I'm excited because Monday, so we have a nice four-day weekend coming up, Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday, Sunday, and when we come back, Christmas Village will be open! And we can shop at Love Park and City Hall, and we can go and shop and see pretty, sparkly things and have hot chocolate. And it's going to be so much fun. And Dilworth Park is open for ice skating.
Ice skating.
Yay. And the light show at night.
Yeah. Oh, they have a light show?
They do. Projected right on City Hall.
That's so cute.
Oh, they have a Ferris wheel this year.
Oh, I've seen it. I've seen it.
On the North Apron.
It's nice.
So Dilworth Park is open for ice skating. Yay! And beautiful people of Philadelphia are smiling from ear to ear, riding their new Ferris wheel. So exciting. Okay, so quick Friend Center recap. We had Covenant House here for their sleep out, which they do a few times throughout the year.
Yep, and I was here. I was here for it.
Overnight.
Yeah, I did not sleep at all.
They had 210 people, including two former managers of the Phillies, Charlie Manuel and Larry Boa, and they raised $500,000 for services.
Half a million dollars. Oh, yeah, I was supposed to do a drum roll with that. $500,000!
So shout out to Rob from the Covenant House, who organizes the events. He was great. He moved tables, everything. So shout out to Rob. You guys did a great job in hosting the Covenant House. We love you guys.
Yay, come back again.
They'll be here in March.
Also, French Child Care Center had the traveling petting zoo come for the little children. And it was so sweet. I mean, they had lions, tigers, and bears. Oh, my.
Oh, my.
Okay, I'm exaggerating. They didn't have lions, tigers, and bears, but they had really cute creatures. And I'm not talking about the children. The children are so sweet. But they had pigs and chickens and a turkey and an alpaca and a calf. And it was just so stinking cute. And you guys can look at those pictures on our social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
So nice recap. We had a great November.
We did. November was fun.
Shout out to the Friends Center.
Shout out to the Friends Center. Growing and doing good things. Speaking of doing good things, we have some great guests here. Very excited to have John Orr, the Executive Director of ArtReach.
Welcome, John.
Thanks for having me.
And we have Charlie Miller, the Director of Access Philly.
Thank you for having us.
Hey, Charlie.
Hello.
So what is up, guys?
How y'all feeling today?
I feel great today.
I'm excited for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Me too.
We're having a cheese party.
A cheese party with...
What's a cheese party?
It's a party in our office with cheese.
Did you guys make that up?
Yeah. 2 days ago.
Really?
Kind of, yeah. So we always cut out a little early right before a holiday. And so there's always a little bit of a push to do something that's not so work-related so we can, you know, just sit down and hang out. And, yeah, a little bit. And this year we just, I don't know, we have like 15 blocks of cheese upstairs right now.
Do y'all have pepper jack?
I don't think so.
You have 15 and now there's a pepper jack.
I don't know if that's the variety that we asked for. We have hot honey and some bacon jam.
That's a fig jam.
Don't worry, I'm coming up to explore it all.
Yes. We got cheddar.
No, we need pepper jack.
Okay.
Well, I need pepper jack.
But I love me some cheddar. Don't worry. I don't need pepper jack.
We can text the staff and let them know that there's been a request.
Yeah. Okay.
You on that?
Yeah.
Okay, good. That. Yeah.
So, guys, I want to get right into all the good, well, John.
Yes.
You are the executive director. How long have you been? Well, tell us a little bit about ArtReach, and then you can tell us about your position as executive director with ArtReach.
Sure. So, ArtReach is a really small nonprofit. We actually just expanded to 6 full-time staff members. And we have a really organizational belief that disability is a product of design rather than diagnosis, and that good design creates a more accessible world. So what we do is we go out and we're literally trying to change the world every day. The way that we do that is we partner with a bunch of organizations to adapt their programming to be more accessible so that people with disabilities can take part in it. It just so happens that they all are arts organizations. So we work with within the city of Philadelphia to make the arts in our city as accessible as possible, with a goal of making Philadelphia the most accessible art city in the country. That's it. That's all we're trying to do.
Change the world. That's
a small goal.
Small goal. I love it.
How long have you been involved, John?
So I joined ArtReach in February of 2015, so just about 5 years now.
And Mr. Charlie, what do you do with ArtReach?
So I just came back to ArtReach last month as the director of Access Philly. So we're expanding our public initiative that most people know us for. But I was with ArtReach from 2014 to 2018 in various roles, including director of programming and then deputy director. Left for a little over a year, but now I'm back for this next chapter in ArtReach's history.
Nice. Can you tell us more about the Access Philly program?
Sure. So it launched in September 2014, and anyone who has a Pennsylvania State Access Card, so you're receiving some type of government benefits, be it the old food stamps program, EBT SNAP, or medical assistance, you would normally have a card from the state of Pennsylvania that is called the Access Card. Mm-hmm. Originally, the program was called Access Admission, and you were able to get into 17 sites for $2 a person. Take 3 people with you, so a group of 4 people or a family of 4 were able to visit some really amazing institutions like the Philadelphia Museum of Art or Philadelphia's Magic Gardens for $8 if you were to take 3 people with you. And we hired a bunch of fancy consultants. They told us you'll probably do about 1,500 people in the first year, and we had 45,000 people use it in year 1.
What?
So it literally changed ArtReach. Like, that it just kind of exploded everything.
Oh my God.
And and we're on track. We'll hit probably 200,000 people this year that'll use the program.
Oh yeah. So what does that tell you about the power of art, that people engage when they have access?
So I think it's not even necessarily the power of art. It's this power of organizations taking time to reflect on themselves and understand the barriers, the specific barriers that people face that are causing that non-engagement to happen in the first place. Mm. So one of the things we always talk about is, in the accessibility community, a lot of people focus on what they can change within a person in order to make it, accessible for that person. When in reality, all we have to do is change the environment that person navigates, right? Our world was built for a bunch of people, but it certainly wasn't built for everyone.
Right.
We're trying to change that narrative a little bit. And we say, if we look at the institutions and the barriers that they have put up, those are barriers that were designed by people just like us, and we can redesign them.
Yeah.
And we just have to understand what the barriers are. So we work with the disability community to understand the barrier, and then we implement the changes that they want. So the Access Philly program was built by Access card holders in Pennsylvania. We just used our position in the city to leverage it in an area where there was a sort of critical mass of arts organizations.
So it seems like you've just given a really succinct summary of how to make systemic change.
Absolutely.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That's what we do.
It's like the folks have a voice and you're listening to it and you're implementing those changes. It's not just what we think is best for folks, but it's like they know what's best for them. So we're listening to what they think is best, and we're actually implementing those things.
Yeah. Wow, I can really appreciate that. Like, I got chills when you said, like, oh, we're, expecting to just hit this many people. 45,000 people?
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
It was a game changer for a very small nonprofit that no one knew about.
Yeah.
For a number of years. And we've been around since 1986.
Wow.
And that was, so when Access Philly launched, that was 2015 program year.
Yes.
So we just closed out our 2019 program year, 185,000 people used the program. It saved them $2.6 million worth of admission fees. And then their attendance at these places for the organizations through admission fees for $2 and then the peripheral spending at gift shops and cafes and things like that, they generated an additional $2.96 million for the arts sector. So it really is a program that said, okay, we're going to understand the barrier, we're going to fix that barrier, get people more engaged, diversify audiences, and then create a new earned revenue stream for the partners as well. So it really worked out.
Yeah, for everyone.
Across the board.
One of the stories that we heard when we finally launched the program, and John and I talk about it a lot, is like, why do we do this? And it's this story is there is a single mom who has an access card, and her family's vacation every year was a trip to the Franklin Institute with her three kids. Mm-hmm. And now she gets to go multiple times the Franklin Institute, and then they run across the street to the Academy of Natural Sciences because it's only now $2
right.
a person. So, right. like, changing also family engagement is a huge piece of what we do. And like, you know, when you hear those stories, you're like, okay, we're still doing the right work, right? Yeah. Like, we're doing the good work.
Yeah. It's also, I mean, when you have a lower price point like that, you can look at a group of people who may not be able to spend 4 hours to tour one of the huge museums in the city, right? They may need to break that up into chunks, but to break that up into chunks,
you have to pay multiple times.
Right, to do multiple visits. With this program, it's okay if you can only go into a museum for an hour and you're spending $2 to get in, because we can
come back.
You have the flexibility,
right?
Yeah, and the great part about the program is that there's no part of the parameters of being a partner is that there's no blackout date, so you have to have that price available for every day that you're open, minus special exhibitions and all that stuff. But for general admission, you have to offer that discount rate.
Wow, yeah. That's amazing. Oh, another amazing thing, the I Am documentary. Oh my goodness, this was so big for you guys. Another big thing for you guys. I mean, because clearly you're blowing things out of the water. Can you please tell us about the I Am documentary?
Yeah, we can.
Good.
So, which is really funny because we just, the I Am documentary just premiered on WHYY. So it was on television this past week, which was really exciting for us because when we set out to do this project that I Am was based on, we thought that we were going to get an 8-minute video out of the project. Again, these you know, tamped down expectations, 1,500 people, 45,000, 8 minutes. We ended up with a 40-minute short film because the filmmaker fell in love with the project. So essentially, we had 6 students from St. Catherine's Day School. It's a special education school out in Wayne, Pennsylvania?
Radnor,
Pennsylvania. And we paired them up with 8 professional dancers at the Pennsylvania Ballet. And then over the course of 10 weeks, they choreographed with Jessica Kilpatrick an original ballet piece. And then once that 10 weeks was done, we brought them to the Fringe Arts Theater, and they performed live at the ArtReach Spring Brunch in front of about 200 people. Mm-hmm. That whole process was not only just an amazing project to begin with and really changed the way we do programming at ArtReach, but was captured by documentary filmmaker Glenn Holston throughout the entire process. And he ended up making this short film called I Am that you can find on our website at art-reach.org. I don't know. We didn't really know what to do. We weren't ever supposed to make a movie. We're a little nonprofit. We don't know what to do with it now. But
so how many people do you think that you've reached once it hit WHYY? All kind of shows run on WHYY. So how many people do you guys think saw this documentary that only was supposed to be 8 minutes long?
We don't have the engagement numbers yet. I don't even know if we'll get them. It's just one of those things. It's sort of been put out into the universe in like a big way, and sometimes we don't know the ramifications of a project or a thing we've done until 2 or 3 years later.
Oh, wow.
We like run into somebody at a conference, or we're at a sensory friendly experience that we're producing at the ballet or some other theater, and somebody will come up and be like, oh my gosh, I saw this, you know, ArtReach program, I did this ArtReach program, and they're telling you their ArtReach story, which is the beauty of what we do, is everyone that we serve has an ArtReach story. And each one is a little different, but there's always that sort of that common narrative about not only life-changing, but also they tell us about the barriers before and the ways in which our programming has like eliminated or knocked down those barriers and changed their engagement with the cultural sector.
Wow. Yeah.
And what was cool about the IAM project was, one, it was the first time we had ever tried something that big and that in-depth with a group of people, creating a mixed ability dance corps for a world premiere ballet was not on anyone's radar. Even like, when I came to ArtReach, it wasn't what we do. But one of the things that it grew out of was we were doing these adaptive dance classes at the Pennsylvania Ballet Studios, where we were bringing people with cognitive disabilities in to go through movement classes. And as part of that, they would go from the studio where they were having their movement class, and then they would see a rehearsal in a studio down the hall a little bit for the Pennsylvania Ballet, and then we would give them tickets to go to the Academy of Music to see that ballet performed live by PA Ballet. And at one point during that process, it came up, bubbling up from the community again, saying, you know, we come here, we have these classes, we have these workshops, we see a rehearsal, and then we get tickets to, you know, see the show in the big theater. But why can't we do that?
Right.
And that was the challenge that was put in front of ArtReach. It was the disability community coming back and saying, you know, other people get to do this. Why can't we?
Yeah.
So we said, I don't know.
Right. So we'll try it.
Right. Yeah.
I love the openness.
Charlie made his favorite phone call. You know, hey, how you doing? It's Charlie. So I have an idea and a favor to ask. And offer.
And it took off.
Yeah. And it was beautiful to see the Pennsylvania Ballet commit to it really quickly. They had a ton of questions. When you're doing adaptive programming, there's anxiety that comes with it, but there's also logistics, right? Like really important logistics that you have to think about. But they gave of themselves fully, and we gave of ourselves fully, and we created this amazing experience, you know, that will live on, like past all of us at ArtReach. And then we replicated it again the next year. You know, we took six students from Overbrook School for the Blind. We took them back to Pennsylvania Ballet, but this time they learned tap with Pennsylvania Ballet dancers. And then they performed that. And once again, that was like, John and I, this is not what we went to school for. This is not our...
I went to school for business.
Right, yeah. You know,
but,
you know, but we wanted to be able to say to the cultural sector is like, we don't also just do one-off programs that just like have this like amazing burst of energy and then sort of like fizzle out, but like, can you replicate it?
Yeah.
You know, and can you embed it into, you know, what that organization, this being Pennsylvania Ballet, does? And we have. Now they're growing their accessible programming without us now, which is actually our purpose, is
right,
we go in
right.
and we plant
right.
those seeds, but at some point in time we want to start to back off and we want it to become part of your organization's like ethos and what you do as, you know, in the community.
So quick question, then time for a break. If somebody wanted to screen the film in the community, would they contact ArtReach or the filmmaker?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so we own the film. We have copies of it upstairs in the offices. Anybody who wants to do a screening, we're pretty open. We'll send it right out to them. We also can do a scenario where if you want to screen the film and have representatives from ArtReach or, you know, a group panel discussion afterwards, we do ask for an in-kind donation, or not an in-kind donation, we ask for a donation for that setup, but we can always set up a panel of people who were involved in the process to come out and talk about the film process as
Great.
Well.
You're listening to Friends on 15th, the podcast coming to you from the Friends Center at 15th and Cherry Streets in Center City, Philadelphia. Friends Center is the Quaker hub for peace and justice in Philadelphia. We're home to more than 40 nonprofit tenants, both Quaker and non-Quaker, like ArtReach, our guest today. We also have conference and event space for your next meeting, and we always have a nonprofit discount. You're also welcome to join Central Philadelphia Friends Meeting for their Quaker worship every Sunday at 11 a.m. And now, back to our podcast.
Okay, so I want to talk about the cafe sessions that you guys have.
Cool. Yeah.
What are those? What do they look like? What do you guys talk about? What does CAFE mean?
Yeah. So CAFE is an acronym. It stands for Cultural Accessibility Forum and Exchange. And I'll be pretty open about it. I think that the CAFE program that we run is probably the most important piece of our programming, even though it engages the least amount of people overall. Mm-hmm. Each year we schedule about three different sessions, and the cafe format is we bring in members from the arts community, members from the human service community, and members from the disability community, all to have inclusive conversations around a topic on making the arts more accessible. So this year we have three different sessions. We're going to talk about accessible ticketing law and best practices. We're going to talk about smart captioning glasses. So if you are a person who's deaf or hard of hearing, you can go to the theater and put these glasses on, and it shows you the captioning of everything that's being said on stage right in front of your eyes. And then multimedia accessibility with PhillyCam in the city, who's going to teach us about, you know, audio description, captioning, and making all of your videos and all of your social media posts a little bit more accessible for the disability community. But the reason that I think it's so important is because we're one of the few areas where we're bringing this fully inclusive conversation to the forefront. We're bringing all stakeholders into the conversation, having these really kind of knotty, tough conversations to start with, and pulling them apart in a safe space with all the communities present so that we can create actual change in the city overall.
And how does one, like, can you just go on your website and sign up for it? Is it free?
Yeah, so they're always free. So the first one is going to be on February 12th from 3 to 5. If you go on our website and you look for the cafe link, mm-hmm. you'll find registration pages as we get a little bit closer to those dates. But yeah, so the first one is Wednesday, February 12th. Here at the Friend Center. Mm-hmm. The next one is Wednesday, April 15th, also here at the Friend Center. And then the final one is Wednesday, June 10th, here at the Friend Center. And all of them...
I sense a theme.
All of them, yeah. We get that nonprofit rate for being attended here, you know? But no, they all take place from about 3 to 5. They're all free sessions, so open to the public. Anyone can come. Get in on the program. And then what we do is... We just started this in September, but we started doing a one-day conference that does have a price point attached to it.
Yes.
We hosted it here at the Friend Center. I think we may have maxed out the space as much as we possibly could, but that's now the cultural accessibility conference that ArtReach runs that builds off of the cafe schedule that we have.
That actually was a good conference.
It was a great conference.
It was a ton of people here. I remember it was like... What was it, not too long ago?
Yep, it was actually on September 11th, yes. Which in 2000 was named Access the Arts Day by the City of Philadelphia. And then it kind of just has existed since, but no one has done anything about it. We've decided to kind of reclaim that day a bit. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to host our conference that day, hopefully every year.
Here at the Friend Center.
Here at the Friend Center, you know,
so
we max out. Yeah, we had about 75 people show up for this thing the first time we did it, and we sold out pretty quickly. So we're now at the point where we're kind of like, all right, so what's next? Like, how do we make it bigger, better? How do we get more people in?
It's also John's birthday.
It's also on my birthday, which is just about the nerdiest cultural thing I can do for myself.
I think it's a great and very sweet way to give back. And it shows how much you love what you do. Mm-hmm. To take a day that, you know, people mostly make about themselves, their birthday. I mean, my birthday is my favorite holiday. You know, it's usually about you. But, I mean, to give back in such a wonderful way to make sure that everyone is included in the things that can be experienced throughout our city. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it had nothing to do with me turning 40 this year to have an inaugural conference on my birthday. Nothing at all.
No reason.
So it seems like in addition to birthdays, you're getting some recognition from the wider community. So I understand you got a pretty sweet award.
Yeah, so it's been a good run the past 18 months, I would say. So... the one that I think you're referring is the one back in May from Ovation Television, who gave us the Stand for the Arts Award. It was a pretty powerful moment for ArtReach because we are so locally focused, right? We're I kind of describe us as hyper-focused on Philadelphia and the surrounding counties. Ovation TV is from LA, and they found out about us, and they flew across the country to give us an award. And so that's been a funny dynamic. So we've gotten a lot of local awards from different places, but in the past 18 months, we've now been recognized for our work 5 times nationally.
Wow.
So what we're doing here seems to be working. And I think what's nice... I think what's nice is, you know, it goes towards our vision, right? We don't want to expand our outreach across the country, right? We don't even want to exist forever. We want Philadelphia to be accessible and not need us. But in the meantime, we do think that we're a pretty good model for the rest of the country to sort of replicate. And this sort of recognition helps validate that a little bit.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
And to talk about like national replication, so the Access program has been replicated nationally. So the Children's Museum Association here in the country has created their own version of our program, partnering with other children's museums. And we're actually, our numbers are still larger than ours, than theirs, sorry, on even though we're, you know, region-based and they're national-based. But so people are starting to like catch on to what we're doing. Yeah.
And what's cool is that even when we look at someone who copies us, right? So then they're pretty open about it. They were like, we saw what you were doing. We stole it. And we were just like, great, that's perfect. But then we were like, no, well, wait a second. So then we were like, let's add theaters. Let's get theaters involved, right? Because nobody's done that. Nobody has said, we'll take a $2 discount museum program, and then we'll create a cross-genre partnership between two different cultural sectors and add theaters in. And so now we've got, I think it's 14 theaters who are providing $2 tickets under the Access Philly banner for any show that they run for any Access card holder.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're up to 51 cultural sites, and come January, it will be 53, probably 54. So the program just keeps growing and growing and growing, including the partner list.
Yeah. Charlie, I want to go back to a term you used just in passing and tease that out a bit more, which is sensory friendly. That's a growing effort. Can you tell us more what that means?
Yeah, so we're lucky that here in Philadelphia, we have the international thought leader on sensory-friendly experiences. His name is Roger Adichie, and he is professor at Temple University. And sensory-friendly experiences are, usually, they start off in the theater format. So it's this idea that there's a way to change a theater goer's experience from the moment they walk in the door until they sit down in their seat. And it opens the possibility for people normally who are on the autism spectrum, but also other sensory, you know, disabilities, are able to engage in the theater going experience. So what we do is we manipulate that experience by changing the expectations of the staff members, so the ushers and different things like that, of what theater etiquette is, right? Mm-hmm. So normally if I go to the theater and I go and I sit down, the house lights go dark, the show starts, and there's an expectation on me, right, the theater go, of what I should do, the behavior that I should have, right? Mm-hmm. We're throwing that out the door because not everybody lives and exists and acts in the world the same way. Yeah. There are people who, for them, normal, quote-unquote, is standing up, twirling, and wailing lightly because they love what's going on stage,
yeah,
right? So if you were to get up and do that in the middle of the Nutcracker, the Pennsylvania Ballet, you would be unceremoniously taken out of the theater,
right?
So we've changed that, right? The house lights stay up. We have fidget toys. We have sensory devices. And when that person gets overwhelmed or experiences a sensory moment, right, and they act normal for themselves, we don't change that behavior. We don't ask them to change the behavior. And there's OT, the occupational therapists in the house, outreach is there, and we actually make these shows sensory-friendly experiences, mm-hmm, right, so that they can go out together as a family.
Oh, right.
Nice. Yeah, families who have members on the autism spectrum tend to become what's called a divided family. So one parent will end up taking the child with a disability, and then another parent will end up managing the kids who don't have a disability, and they end up becoming divided and doing things separately as a family, right? Yeah. These sensory-friendly experiences, for the most part, as we've gotten feedback, bring the family together in the public for the first time at a cultural experience.
Right.
And now we're growing the sensory-friendly experiences past theaters. They're starting to do it at public gardens. They're doing it at museums, things like that. So we're leading that charge with practitioners like Roger Adichie and other occupational therapists on making this city, honestly, sensory friendly.
Yeah.
So that families are staying together,
right,
and the people that we think need the arts the most have access to it.
Yeah. 'Cause that's something something that you don't really think about mm-hmm. until it's happening, and you see like a family almost being shamed.
Yeah.
And they're embarrassed, and like you feel compelled to be like, no, like you're okay, like you're fine. But it's other folks who are looking like.
Yeah, who may not be expecting yeah. a child to stand up and, like you exactly. said, twirl and wail because they're so excited about what they're right. seeing or what they're feeling, and they, you know, that's how they express it. So, yeah, they shouldn't be, right. you
and
know.
And a lot of times, like, families themselves, they put a lot of shame on themselves, right. and they put the embarrassment, like, I'm sorry, and we're like, no, yeah. like, well, you don't have yeah. to be, but, you know, it's kind of, they kind of feel like they have to say something because it's, like, quote-unquote, not normal right, for people right, to right, behave yeah. that way.
When we did the first sensory-friendly Nutcracker with the Pennsylvania Ballet, there was a family that came in. Oh, I will never forget them. They came up to us at intermission, and they said, this is the first time we haven't had to say, I'm sorry, over and over and over again to the people around us. Mm-hmm. You know, do you remember Frankie? Mm-hmm. Do you remember her? And it was because they had never been in a theater together as a family, and they had four kids, and they had never been in a theater together as a family, and we provided that opportunity so that Frankie could be Frankie, mm-hmm. the family could be the family, and they didn't have to say I'm sorry over and over again to the people standing around them.
I love yeah. it.
I think the analogy I always try to use when people are trying to like understand what we're doing is it's like the opposite of an Amtrak train, right? So for hundreds of years, the theater has been conducted in one way. It was quiet, dark lights, sit there until it's time to applaud or whatever. And that's how you have to act, right? What we want to do is make it more like an Amtrak train, right? We want to get away from that as the rule. On a train, you have one car that's the quiet car, and that's the exception. If that's the experience you want, then that should be the exception that you go and try to get. The rest of the train, you can basically do whatever you want. It's for everybody else in the world who wants just a regular experience with friends, family, and or themselves. And so I want to see that dynamic flip overall for the theater community, where we make experiences for the you know, most of the world, most of the time. And if there is an exception that needs to be made, let's make it for that more yeah. restrictive performance.
I can appreciate that. I remember you guys for Halloween, you guys had a party, and I don't know his name, but he came in dressed as a hot dog, and he was excited, I was excited, and I thought it was the most adorable yeah. thing. Yes. He was just like, I'm ready to go and party dressed up like a hot dog. Yeah. It brought me so much joy yeah. to see him so excited to, you know, to come to an event that was specifically for, you know, a community, you know, rallying around him, and, you know, it was amazing.
Yeah, and so that's the key, right? So we do these events, right? And you just mentioned like an event specifically for him. We're doing events now that we're kind of like, it's not specifically about this mm-hmm. about this group. We don't want to segregate this group into yes. that kind of program. What we want to do is we'll do that program with you in the hopes that we're chipping away at your general operations so that you're creating universally designed programs that anybody at any given time can show up to and feel comfortable in.
I think you just, Jennifer, when you said that, it one light bulb moment for me is we do this amazing thing with the flower show every year. So, you know, Philadelphia mm-hmm. does its flower show in the spring. Huge deal. It's known nationally. We started a program in 2014 where we took individuals who are blind and low vision to the flower show in the early hours during the VIP tours, where it's super quiet in there, and we do an audio description of the flower show for people who are blind and low vision, right? And when I started in 2014, we would get about 300 free tickets to the flower show that we would distribute to the disability community and the low-income community. And this year, because of the relationship that we've nurtured with, you know, the Horticultural Society, they gave us 2,000 tickets to distribute to the disability community and to the low-income community. But in that block of 2,000, they gave us 200 VIP tickets. These are tickets that are normally $125, right? Wow. So that we can take more people who need a quieter, sensory-friendly experience at the flower show, you know, with their families and their friends. So we're going to be running around doing audio description tours, hopefully we'll, you know, schedule an ASL tour, you know, so people can have American Sign Language. You know, we'll be inviting people who, once again, would never go to the flower show because they have a family member who, quote unquote, acts differently in the world, but actually is just acting in the world. You know, they're just being in the world. Mm-hmm. We're going to be able to provide those experiences to them for something that, in my opinion, everyone should see. Everyone should see the flower show.
Yeah,
we're just, so we're just knocking down that barrier.
Do you have volunteers who assist you with that kind of interpretation?
Yeah, so we've been really fortunate over the past couple of years. We've been working with the occupational therapy department at Temple University. So a lot of these bigger events, we have some OT students coming in, and they're getting in-practice experience on environmental design, which was kind of the focus that Roger Adishi put in place when he went into to Temple University's OT department. So we do get a bunch of volunteers from that perspective. We end up with an assortment of other areas where we're pulling volunteers from. Some of them are donors. Some of them are people who found out about us and just want to give back a little bit because they've been through a program themselves and they just want to kind of get involved and give back to the community a little bit more. But yeah, we're kind of always looking for volunteers.
And how can they find you?
www.art-reach.org, or just email kind of any one of us. We go by the first initial last name method. All of our emails are on the website, and you can reach out to any of us. If you just want general information, if you send an email to info@art-reach.org, it hits every inbox for every staff member, all six of us, and someone will respond to you probably within the day.
And social media.
Oh, social media, yeah. So we're on everything that we're supposed to be on, I think. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, we're always ArtReach Philly. So just hit us up and, you know, we love to
donate your finances or time. Well, I am so excited that we got to spend some time with you guys.
Yeah.
And you have schooled us
right.
on all the good that you are doing. I am seriously thoroughly impressed by the outcome. Not only by what you're doing, but how the impact that is making on the community.
Right.
Like, I think it's amazing. And every time you guys, you know, like, all right, we're just going to set a little bar because we're, you know, a little organization. Like, just having that pure intent, I think, is what really drives the great results that you guys are getting. You know, to just say, all right, we're just going to do this program. And then to have such enormous results and such... you know, magnified recognition. I mean,
yeah.
You know.
I think so. The big takeaway for us always, whenever I talk to people, is that if you're thinking about doing something, just stop thinking about it and just go ahead and do it. Because when we look back at what we accomplished over the course of a year, I mean, we're looking at, you know, a staff of six with a cash budget of less than $500,000 every year, but. Last year, over 212,000 people experienced the arts in an accessible way through an ArtReach program. And that is a really big number
right.
For the size of organization that we are.
Mm-hmm.
And really wild to think about, you know, in comparison to where we were just in 2014 when we were only serving 13,000 people a year. So this huge jump is simply because the crew here is just, we're not really afraid to say, okay, yeah, well, let's go do it.
Let's try it.
Right,
let's try
it.
Yeah.
1,000-mile journey starts with a single step.
Yeah. If we fail, we fail. We'll fail spectacularly.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's like, that's just a thing in life, period.
Yeah.
You just have, if you think about it, you just have to do it.
Because
mm-hmm. it's just going to always be a thought at the end of the day. But if
yeah.
you do it, you have the chance of impacting someone, impacting your own self, or not.
Yeah.
But either way, it's just it'll be a good outcome.
Yep. And if you want to support ArtReach, you can always go to artreach.org/donate. We are always looking for additional donations to help support our work.
Nice.
So thank you guys again for coming. I think you told us a lot about ArtReach. You did a very thorough explanation of what you guys do and how you impact the community. So we just want to thank you for coming. We enjoyed your company.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
And happy Thanksgiving.
And I just want to say that a lot of times we don't really think about the community in an accessible way until we experience it on our, you know, our own. Like, maybe we have a family member that's, you know, in a wheelchair or something, and then we look at the world differently. Yep. And I can say for myself, it's true for myself. Mm-hmm. So my brother is in a wheelchair, and he wasn't all his life, but now I'm starting to see the world different, and it shouldn't be like that. You shouldn't have to have that experience to see the world different. So just be mindful of different things. Just one pet peeve that I hate is walking down the street and it's like two cars parked in the garage, and I'm just like, I get so irritated. Like, why? Like, if my brother was on this sidewalk, he could not. He would have to go out into the street and go over the curb, and no one ever thinks about, like, just the little stuff like that. So I think if people just, you know, keep an open mind and think about the things that are not accessible to everyone, we could probably make this place a better place.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Hear,
hear. Yes. So you've been listening to the Friends on 15th podcast from Friend Center, the Quaker Center for Peace and Justice in Philly. Check us out, www.friendcentercorp.org, or call us at 215-241-7100. If you'd like to hold your events or meetings or conference, please let us know. We will be glad to help you out. So thanks again, John and Charlie. We enjoyed your company.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
No quote today?
No quote today.
Okay. She usually hits us with, like,
I do, but, you know, not today. We love y'all, though.
We love you, Jim.
Yeah, we can love you guys back.